This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson, and we are talking today about surveillance. There are thousands and thousands of closed-circuit surveillance cameras in New York City. And now an artist has just added one more to the mix.
Our image is being taken probably hundreds of times a day.
That's Wafa Bilal. He's just had a tiny camera surgically embedded in the back of his head.
By having the camera very visible, implanted in my head, this project is really raising awareness about surveillance.
For the next year, the camera will automatically snap pictures of whatever's behind him once a minute. Those pictures will then be beamed live to a museum exhibit in the Persian Gulf. It sounds like a wacky art project now, but what Bilal's doing might, in a few years, be as normal for any of us as posting a status update on Facebook. The government isn't installing cameras in the backs of people's heads yet, but it's seriously investing in technology that tracks and identifies people. A lot of that research is in the field of facial recognition and teaching a machine to recognize a face in any environment at any angle. Turns out to be a very tricky task.
So there's pose, the way the face presents itself to the camera. Illumination, so how it's the face is lit. You could be outdoors on a sunny day with very strong shadows cast by the sun and the eyes sort of scrunched up.
Peter Bellhumer is a professor of computer science at Columbia University. Over the last 15 years, he's been one of the leaders in the quest to give computers the ability to recognize human faces.
And then expression. So people could be laughing or crying or talking. And because the face isn't a rigid object, it changes its shape. And of course, the goal is to be able to recognize the person in spite of all this variation.
I met up with Bellhumer in his office at Columbia and asked him about the state of facial recognition today.
One of the big shifts in the field over the course of the last 5 years is to do what we call face recognition in the wild, which is essentially how can you do it given that the subject is not necessarily cooperating. They're being photographed in the course of doing something like, mm-hmm. Walking through a door.
What's the wildest circumstance, the least controlled circumstance under which it works reliably, and what is beyond its current ability to work?
Well, that's an excellent question, but it depends on the application. So if you want to put a face recognition system on a personal computer to prevent access by, people who shouldn't be on it, the systems work fine for that, right? That's not a problem. If you have a photo that's taken of someone, with a subway camera, with poor quality, they're looking down, and you want to recognize that person in a data set, say, of a million photos, we're not there yet.
So what is the science? How does this work?
When you start with an image, you essentially have a sensor which measures, photon counts at each pixel. And so that measurement, we like to say, is very high dimensional. And so the question is, how do you take this high-dimensional measurement, extract features from it which are discriminative, that allow you to tell one thing from another?
Can you show me some of the stuff you're working on?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we were looking at doing was to figure out why is it that it's so hard to do recognition in the wild, with images where there's so much variability. And we'd been doing a lot of work in species identification, in particular with plants. And so in that world, the game is essentially, in taxonomy, is to recognize something using what's known as a dichotomous key. You ask a series of questions about the visual appearance, and when you answer those questions, you follow a tree, and at the bottom of the tree is the species. In a case of a leaf, is it simple or compound? Is its margin toothed or not?
The kinds of stuff one does in science classes.
Exactly. But you'd answer those questions. That's taxonomy. And so
right.
We thought, maybe there's an analogy in the work that we're doing in the face space. Is it possible that we can look at images of faces and also describe them in that fashion? So what's the age? What's the ethnicity? What's the gender? Do they have thick eyebrows or not? What's the eye color? And so on. So here's an example of that.
We're looking at a big computer screen of a lot of faces.
So if you have these, there are many different faces, and if you just look at females and those wearing eyeglasses that are middle-aged with dark hair, you can winnow this collection of many photos to just down to one, and you don't have to do it that way. You could do it a different way. For instance, Caucasians with teeth showing, outside, with a tilted head, right? And you can arrive at a different person. So we call these different questions describable visual attributes, and so what we spend a lot of time doing is building classifiers that are very good at doing this in images.
Are there glitches or surprises in the process of defining those attributes that you've come across?
Yeah, I mean, well, one of the challenges is that in order to build computational algorithms that are good at doing this, you need data. You need to label data sets, and you need people to make those labels. And people come to the table with biases, which show up in our classifiers. So, for instance, if you ask, is this person have thick eyebrows, they'll always label a man as having thick eyebrows, but never a woman.
Huh.
When there are plenty of women that have thick eyebrows.
Right.
So you have to go in and kind of fix that.
You get government funding in part?
Yes.
From DARPA or one of those?
We just say Department of Defense.
Uh-huh. You just say it. Do they say, this is what we're interested in, or do they just keep their cards close to their vest and say, we like this, here's some money?
No, they definitely say what they're interested in. I think they want to do face recognition and verification in the wild and in unconstrained environments, so where the person being photographed is not necessarily cooperating.
Uh-huh.
And you can imagine why that sort of thing is important to them.
Right. So especially in war, as we have come to know it, in counterinsurgency situations and all that, would be useful, as opposed to the traditional battlefield where who cares who that guy is.
That's right. And one of the reasons that face recognition doesn't go away is because it's essentially this passive biometric, and you can acquire the data at a distance.
Does the ultimate application of this, the ways in which it could be used, ever give you pause?
Well, you know, we think about it a lot, certainly within the group, and I don't think we're at the point at which these sorts of biometrics can essentially label people with perfect identity or any of that. And I think that there are interesting policy questions about, you know, that surround that. And, you know, personally, I'm on the side of less of this is better.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's a really interesting scientific question.
Will you reach a point, though, as this gets better and better and better in your research some years hence, where your predisposition to think that less is more comes to a head with, look how good we've gotten?
Yeah, I think at that point I'll stop, but there's no danger of that yet.
Really?
Yeah.
You've still got another 10 years of making it better?
There's a lot of work to do. And I think that, you know, when you get better in one domain, then people ask you to solve it for another. And so that's where we are now.
The Columbia University professor Peter Ballhumer. Facial recognition isn't his only game. He's just developed a really nifty iPhone app for identifying trees from their leaves. You can hear more about that at Studio360.org.